And so I'm going to try to keep things short. The first one I think is on your screen now. As you can see, the article honoring and showing the work that Kathy Sulick did, who was a member of CFAS, has come out. And I think we really need to thank Scott Parnell for putting this together. He did an outstanding job in putting this paper, and I think everyone should go out and read it, because Kathy just did an outstanding job and was a valuable contributor to the CFAS. We also have Jeff Wozniak, who, if Jill can put that up. And Jeff was interviewed by PBS NewsHour for an hour show that they're going to do on FASD. I believe that's right anyway. I think it's an hour. Well, it's called NewsHour, so I guess it is. And has anyone else been contacted by them for?
This is Tina. I was. This is the PC who's doing the story. I don't know if that's the same one Jeff was contacted by, but I had put her or given her Ken Warren's information to talk further.
Okay, they're interviewing you because I understand it's a result of the paper that came out.
Yeah, so I did. I've talked to her for about an hour a couple of weeks ago, and then she was looking for other people. I think she talked to Dr. Mitchell and Tom, but that's as far as that.
All right, well, I think this is really good. I'm glad that everyone who's been asked has participated then.
Ed, I'll just interrupt on that same note. Our Research Institute, Vancouver Coastal Health, interviewed me for a short story that's going to just be a local release here, commenting on the prevalence study, how important it was. So,
Get a copy of that. And then
I will. It'll come out. I think it's coming out next week. As soon as it's out, I'll send it.
And send it
to
Jennifer. Yeah.
I'll do that.
We can put that up. All right. And then there are two papers, the updates on a concept proposal and one new paper that's been submitted. And they're there. You can't see the submitted one. But let's see, Jill, that's from the Tories. I don't have control of the screen, it's Jill. And the Tories have a manuscript in submission.
I have it up. Can everyone else see?
I can use the scroll bars, Ed.
Oh.
On my screen.
I'm sorry. Oh, you can. All right. So if you go down, it'll be there. So the Tories have the paper in submission, and we have two concept papers, so people should look those over and see what they can do. Christy, do you want to say anything about the subjects that you're looking for assistance on your project?
Sure. To coincide with the RSA meeting in June, we're going to be doing two different primary activities related to our grant. On June 13th and 14th, we're going to be running focus groups, and we'll be looking for participants. I've contacted a few people in the area related to that, but if there are other ideas, we're definitely open and interested in that. So we're going to have focus groups on the 13th in San Diego, and we're going to go up to Los Angeles to do focus groups on the 14th. And then following the study group meeting on the 17th, 20th, I'm going to be available to be doing some more videography. We've been going really well to recruit somewhere between maybe.
Whoever has the pet bird, could they keep it quiet?
That is a little distracting, but so videography, we're looking for 2 to 3 families in either San Diego, LA, sort of that broad area we're willing to travel. in that region. And we go to families' homes, and we film for roughly about 3.5 to 4 hours to gather video for the app. We've gotten pretty good recruitment here, but there's a few demographics that I'm specifically interested in particular, and that would be families with preschool-age girls, so anywhere from 3 to 6 would be a gap that we have, and then biological parents in particular, of any kids of any age or gender. We are also looking for teens and adults with FASD in the area who would be willing to be interviewed for about 30 to 45 minutes, obviously not talking the whole time, but we're trying to create video clips to give hope and help families see that people can be successful with FASD and what that might look like. So that is something else that we're looking for. So if there are people who, families that might be open to talking with me about it, if you're able to, you know, just mention the idea to them and they can either contact me or if you're able to send me their contact information, I can reach out to them and explain it more and see if that's something that they're interested in.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's you're doing coming along really well on the project, so any help that we could give from CFAS would be appreciated.
The families have been really enjoying doing the videos with us, and it ends up being a lot of fun. The kids really like it, too. So, and if families are reluctant, like I can share clips that we've already created so far, and they can kind of get a better feel for it. But it's really quite a lot of fun.
Okay. I also want to mention Sarah Matson presented last week, I guess, at the Interagency Coordinating Committee on FASD. And I heard that her presentation went very, very well. So thanks, Sarah, for doing that as well. All right, we're still missing
Sarah.
Yeah.
No, what? I was just going to agree. I was going to agree with you. This is Bill. That her presentation went well, as did Claire and Julie's presentations at the ICCFASD. So thank you.
So they didn't tell me they did
that. There as well, and I'm here now. Sorry, I'm a bit late.
Hi, Dale. Welcome. A couple of things, other notes, and then we'll get on to the presentations. I have been negligent in getting out the reviews that the SAB did. It was a busy travel month with the Vancouver meeting and then Dan Savage's center grant. And so I promise I've sent some of them out, but I promise I'll get them all out by the middle of next week. Another issue has come up, and so I just want to make sure that in this latest iteration of CFAS we don't have the same problem, that when your consents should all make sure that the data sharing plan exists within that consent so that the data can be shared. We're having some problems in that didn't always happen in phase one or phase two. And I want to avoid that problem going forward. So please make sure that your consents have the fact that anonymized data might be shared.
Is there a specific wording for that, a set piece that someone has put together, Bill or Helen or somebody?
Joanne, this is Leah. It's in the text that I sent you. Maybe last week, we have all that text about data sharing should be in it. If it's not,
okay.
I will make sure to send it out.
Okay, I will go back to that. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we're going to have another meeting on the 23rd of this month, and that's when the UH2 grants are going to present. As I meant, Jill is still missing some of the slide sets that were at our meeting in D.C., so if you could please get those to her if you haven't already done that. And I don't know whether she's already sent out or will send out reminders of that to people who haven't gotten them in yet, but we like to put those on the website in the private section, so we have them as an archive. Then everyone's aware that we're going to meet at the RSA meeting on Friday. From 3 to 9, we will make arrangements to take a break for dinner, but or arrange something for dinner. But Right now, we don't have an agenda yet, but please, when you make your travel arrangements, please try to get here by 3 o'clock, which should be possible for everybody.
And that's in the RSA Hotel?
We have a room set up at the RSA. It's at the Hyatt, so and RSA is providing us with a room.
Okay.
The ISPR meeting in Kyoto, the travel support that from NIAAA and R13 grant that Jen Thomas and I have, you have to get those in. The application's on the ISPR website. I can say right now, however, that we have gotten about 2.5-3 times the number of applications that we normally get. So either Kyoto is a very, very popular place, or we've been doing a better job in getting out the information about this potential travel support. And Tina and Scott, as all you know, I think are putting out a special birth defects research issue on FASD. And if they've been in touch, or you can be in touch with them if you're interested in contributing. But they will be due early September. And I guess that's...
I should say, we sent around reminders. We got 22 submissions or people who were interested, and I think 4 or 5 of them were from CCAS investigators. The due date was last Friday. If there are stragglers that want to submit something, we would certainly like to get it this week if we can.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, and good luck with that issue. That's a good response. 22.
Yeah, it was.
All right. WebEx. Jill, did you decide who was going first, or did they decide?
I did not.
Well, Dr. Jones, are you ready?
I'm ready, but I don't have a WebEx. I think Jill submitted, or there you go.
We got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So basically, this is what I'm going to report. It's basically a report on the dysmorphology research resource as of today, and I'm just going to go through the aims and explain to you where we are in terms of all of them. And you know the first aim is to assure consistency as well as accuracy and recognition of this disorder at all sites where new subjects are being recruited. And as far as that's concerned, we've recruited subjects or Sarah has recruited 35 subjects that I have seen over the last couple months. And while I was in Vancouver, Joanne set up 3 adult subjects for me to see who were there for the Vancouver meeting. So basically, we've seen 38 individuals. And with respect to our teaching program, Dr. Del Campo and I have done 2 to 3 day individual face-to-face trainings for 11 physicians here in San Diego, not all from San Diego, but 1 from Spain, 2 from the 2 patients that were the 3 adult subjects that we saw in Vancouver. We trained 2 physicians from the University of British Columbia, Christine Locke and Tim Overlander, who are going to do the examinations of the adult study that Joanne is doing in Vancouver. And we've also, I just would mention that we have Margaret Adam to examine all the adults in Seattle. And I'm going to do the adults in Atlanta, so we're set as far as that's concerned. And then we've trained 8 from the United States. All 8 of the latter are UCSD pediatric residents who are in their 3rd year of training. They'll be leaving San Diego in July to start practice in various other areas in the U.S., and I only mention that because we were criticized for training people in San Diego, and I just want to make it clear that pediatric residents who are at UCSD do not necessarily stay in San Diego. They go out all over the United States to practice after they finish their residency, and that's where they are at this point. So we've trained 8 of them over the last year or so as well. So aim two is to utilize and expand upon the research registry that we have developed here in San Diego, which was started to ascertain children with prenatal alcohol exposure who will be available for research projects. And I must tell you that this has been a major source for a large number of people in CIFASD who are doing clinical projects. First, we've increased the number of subjects in the registry to 149. These are all individuals who have been prenatally exposed to alcohol. Some of them have the full-blown fetal alcohol syndrome, some partial fetal alcohol syndrome. Many have alcohol-related neurobehavioral defects, and some of them are completely normal. So we have a host of patients to draw on from that. We've contacted and received permission from subjects in the registry to refer 59 subjects to Sarah for her decision tree study, and we've sent all 59 of them to Sarah. We've now received IRB approval from UCSD to draw blood from subjects in our research registry for Joanne Weinberg's UO1 grant, and blood drawing will begin in the near future. However, we are still awaiting approval of the material transfer agreement to send those specimens to her. And I think that is going to be completed in the very near future. We also have been requesting parents. Christy just mentioned that she's going to do these focus groups here in San Diego. We've been requesting parents of children with prenatal exposure to alcohol from the registry to contact Christy regarding these focus groups. And we have sent seven to her. I don't know whether she's gotten all seven of them or not, or how many she's got and how many of those that she's got she was able to sign up. So as far as aim three is concerned, our telemedicine project, the program has sort of been changed a little bit. We are going to what we're going to do is broken up into four different projects that are going to go over the 4 years of the study. The first is the convergent validity of telemedicine, which is years 1 and 2. The second is reliability of telemedicine, that's years 2 through 4, and then training in telemedicine 2 through 4, and then application of telemedicine in remote areas as well. And I will tell you that as far as the convergent validity of telemedicine is concerned, we've scheduled not two but 4 subjects for May 8th, that's next week, 4 subjects for May 9th, and 2 for May 10th, and we have 5 more dates scheduled over the next 5 weeks as well. So we have a total of 48 subjects for this part of the telemedicine project. And as of the end of next week, we'll have about a fifth of those. And I think probably by the end of May, we'll probably have another fifth of those, if not more. So I would just mention one other thing. We've not started the reliability of medicine yet, but in anticipation of that, we've trained 4 pediatric residents and 2 dysmorphology genetics fellows to diagnose fetal alcohol syndrome, and we're going to get started in that in the not-too-distant future as well. That's for years 2 through 4. I just mentioned the application of telemedicine in remote areas. I've talked to Dan Savage, I think just last week or 2 weeks ago. We have been granted medical privileges at the Zuni Indian Health Hospital. Now, unfortunately, that took about 8 months to get settled, but we've got that now. And I think we're going to try to get out there to start the application, the telemedicine project at the Zuni Reservation in western New Mexico sometime in the next couple months. So that's my report.
Okay, any questions?
I got one for Ken. And this is Dale. I'm wondering, is this study powered statistically, or is this kind of just a convenient sample, or what?
It's powered. And the person that powered it is Tina. So yeah, for the conversion study, the convergent validity of telemedicine study, we'll have 48 subjects, 16 with FAS and 32 without FAS seen face-to-face by Miguel, and then at the same time, I will see them by telemedicine, and then we'll flip it as well. So for that, it's 48 subjects, and it has been powered, yes.
Thank you.
I have a question. The IRB approval for the blood draws,
yeah,
you said it was for Joanne. Do you have, was it specific to Joanne's, or is it to draw blood and then have things done on it?
It's the latter. It's to draw blood and do other things on it as well.
Okay. All right.
This is Helen. Helen Yazaret.
Yes.
I have a question regarding central repository potentially use of your data and store it in the central repository. Did you have any plans for that?
For the telemedicine.
Yeah, I think it definitely will be sent to the central repository, Helen.
So may I ask you, please, in what format currently you store your data? Is it the same kind of like exosome input tool that we used, or do you use some paper?
Helen, I want to interrupt. I think that's a specific question that is just a technical issue that you need to work out with Ken,
okay,
rather than take up the time here to do that.
No problem. And, problem. Thank
yeah,
you.
Ken, you've used the central repository for your other data, and
absolutely.
So, so you two can touch base on that.
Sounds good. Ed,
thank you. I'll do that. Yeah. Thank you.
I have another question.
Yep.
You're talking about doing the remote areas.
Yes.
Do you think it'd be wise to show the validity of it before you set that up?
Well, I think that.
I have no question that it's valid, but
right.
it would be nice to show that before, because I know it's a big investment.
Well,
both
yeah,
in
I,
machinery
I,
and time.
Right.
So.
I think I'm hoping that Dan and I can come to some agreement on some of the financial issues related to it. I don't know whether Dan's on the call or not.
I'm here.
Okay. Well, that, again, is a specific issue that you and I have to take. We're certainly not going to take it up now, but I'm hopeful to be able to offset some of my travel out there. But I think that we will have the equipment, particularly in that we are planning initially to do this just in the Zuni reservation as opposed to a variety of different reservations in western New Mexico.
And I thought that one of the issues that was that you were collaborating with Jeff on this.
I am collaborating with Jeff on this.
Okay, because I don't see that in here. That's
yeah, well, that is one of the places. Albuquerque is one, and Minneapolis is the other. Well, actually, western Minnesota is the other one. And we are collaborating with Jeff, and we are also collaborating with MOFAS on that because they have the outreach clinics. And I failed to mention that, but we are sort of waiting until such time as we go out there to see the patients that Jeff is going to get for us to see to diagnose FAS or no FAS. And I know I've talked to Jeff about it, and we're going to get that started sometime, I think, in the next couple months.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was still on, since it wasn't
still on. It's still on.
Okay.
Do you have any interest? I really enjoyed this paper that you sent out, and I think I agree with you. I think it's very important. It doesn't change my feelings, to be quite honest, that I expressed at the Vancouver meeting, but I think it's really an interesting paper, and I guess at some other time maybe we should talk about it, or in fact maybe it would just be you and I and Miguel that would talk about it.
We should have lunch someday.
That sounds like a great idea.
and discuss the aging face. And
the aging face syndrome, which is what this guy calls it.
Right. And that was only one of many papers. And I think you're right, though. I think in the age of adults that you would plan to make the diagnosis, the aging face would not be a major concern.
I don't think so either. I appreciate
Into the 20s or 30s, but I think if you tried to do it in a 50-year-old person, you'd have problems.
Well, I don't know about problems, but I think there would be some things that would have to be overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to talk to you about it. And I think we can.
All right. So now we'll hear from any other questions? Okay. Joanne.
How do I share the screen? Jill?
Go to the Quick Start tab in the upper left-hand corner.
Yep.
And then in the center of that screen, there's something that says Share My Screen.
Got it.
Oh, is that a commercial?
Do the swap display thing in the upper left.
How do I get rid of...
See that little white menu thing, swap displays? It's on the top of your screen.
I got rid of that, but now I've advanced my slides to the wrong place. Try that again.
I think you're fine now.
How's that? Is that clear? Can everyone see that?
There's a little spot displays thing on the top, up at the top left of your screen.
You see show, use slideshow, swap display. Because right now you're in the presenter mode.
Oh, mine.
Okay, how do I...
Across the top.
Just a minute, I have to get out of here. You are sharing your screen.
Yeah, that's...
No, you want to stay in your present... Click PowerPoint on again, Joanne.
I'm sorry.
Joanne, your screen is being shared, but it's being shared in the view...
In the presenter mode. How do I swap the screen?
Up on top, there's a little thing that says swap display. If you close your PowerPoint out and go back to where you were. All right, now open your PowerPoint, I guess.
I don't have my Cisco screen up. Let's see. You are sharing. Okay.
We can see your...
Joanne, it's within your PowerPoint. Just click your... Start your display again. Start your...
Sorry about this, guys.
Sure. Now, start your presentation. Now, on the upper left of your screen, there's four little white icons.
No, my screen is now covered with my presentation, so.
Okay, I can troubleshoot this for everybody. You guys all have plus and minus buttons at the top of your screen. You can make her thing bigger.
Okay.
I'm good. You could just go.
Go ahead. It works. Thanks, Jill.
All right. Sorry about that, guys. Okay. So a little bit of background, I'm not going to give too much. We know a lot about prenatal alcohol exposure, but we don't know very much about what happens in adulthood, and we don't know very much about health overall, child and adult. Our developmental project took this on, looked into this, and I think we are the first to identify links among maternal alcohol consumption, inflammation, and child outcomes. And I'm not going to present those data again, but we did an extensive cytokine analysis and found unique cytokine signatures in pregnant women in association with whether or not they consumed alcohol. That's not entirely surprising, but what was really fantastic was that it was also in association with the neurodevelopmental outcome of the child. whether or not the child showed neurodevelopmental deficits. We also now have finished running all of the cytokines on the children. We got a second sample of second set of child samples, and analysis is underway to see what we have. And we now have enough child samples that we can break the child groups into the same four groups, exposed to alcohol or not, with neurodevelopmental deficits or not. I think that will be a really exciting analysis. So the UL1 builds on that developmental project, and we're going to be examining immune profiles in pregnant women and in children from birth through adulthood, with the idea that prenatal alcohol will induce dysregulation of the immune system and be associated with adverse outcomes, health, functional, and adaptive outcomes. I'll just mention again the DOHAD hypothesis. The idea that there's a relationship between the early environment and adult outcomes was first published by David Barker's group, who showed correlations between low birth weight and adverse health outcomes in adulthood, including things like cardiovascular disease, insulin resistance, hypertension, the basis of metabolic syndrome. But with research, it became apparent that low birth weight itself was not the cause of these adverse outcomes. Rather, low birth weight is a proxy for an adverse prenatal environment, adverse intrauterine conditions. And this brings up the idea, which is that early life events can program body and brain systems and alter the developmental trajectory, and that is what underlies the increased later life vulnerabilities. Turns out that hormones are a key aspect of programming, and there's lots of evidence now suggesting that programming or resetting of key hormonal systems by early experience may provide one link between early events and long-term health outcomes. And in fact, in particular, the stress system has been identified with the idea that this changes in stress system responses. Sensitivity can provide possibly a final common pathway for effects of multiple early life events. Now, we look at the stress system a little more broadly, and this is how people look at it today. Typically, I've always talked about the HPA axis, which produces the end product cortisol in humans, and that helps us respond to and cope with stress. But there are really three arms to the stress response, and really, we should be considering all of these. The second arm is the autonomic nervous system. Adrenaline is released, or epinephrine. This is the fight or flight response. It's a quick response to a challenge. The HPA response is a bit slower, changes metabolic and other system responses to cope with the stressor. And then there's the immune inflammatory system. And actually, all three of these systems are highly susceptible to programming, and appear to play a role in long-term vulnerability. And we're going to be focusing more on the immune inflammatory system in our studies. So this DOHAD framework is relatively new to the FASD field, but I think it's a really important approach to understand effects of early life experiences. And in that framework, you can ask questions a bit differently, not just the teratogenic effects of alcohol, but thinking about resetting brain and body systems, which in turn can underlie vulnerability or resilience. So our two aims, I'll start with aim one. Aim one is to build on the developmental project to use validation cohorts to confirm the utility of maternal and infant or child immune parameters as possible biomarkers for and or predictors of alcohol-related adverse outcomes, health and neurobehavioral outcomes. And here we've really leveraged the CFAS resources to utilize plasma samples collected in other ongoing studies. So number one, we are continuing and extending our collaboration with TINA, who is in the process of recruiting a new Ukraine cohort. And from this new cohort, we will get matched mother-infant pairs. Our developmental project had a sample of mothers and a sample of children, but they were not necessarily matched. And I think having matched pairs is a little more powerful in terms of elucidating maternal influences on child outcome. So Tina will, with her group, will provide us with all of the clinical information, maternal demographics, characteristics, health, substance use, and so on. Infants at birth will have a dysmorphology exam, 6 and 12 months daily, and we will collect blood from mothers and infants at birth, mothers, mid-gestation, infants at birth, to look at plasma cytokines. And then we'll extend to other groups in order to increase our take on cultural, ethnic, socioeconomic, environmental conditions to provide insight into those sorts of factors that might modulate alcohol's effects. So Ken alluded to this just now in his talk, working with Ken and Tina, and with some help from Sarah in recruiting control subjects, and Tina also has some suggestions for sources for control children. Here we'll look at children a broad age range, 5 to 17, being seen by Ken, recruited for his subject pool and registry. These children will come in, have a dysmorphology exam, and a blood sample taken. And we have a short health survey we've developed, and they will answer that health survey. And for those born in San Diego County, we can also get from those children banked maternal mid-trimester plasma samples and child newborn blood spots. So that's a really powerful set of samples, because we'll have the mom, we'll have the infant at birth, and we'll have the child later on. And being able to follow the same child longitudinally to look at health and immune function, I think, is going to be dynamite. And as Ken said, he's already recruited quite a lot of children, and this part of the study will happen soon. The child health survey is at Ethics right now. Hopefully we'll come through quickly. As soon as we have that, we will send it to Ken, and that part can begin. And the second fortuitous connection is with Jeff Wozniak, not with his imaging studies for CFAS, but his ongoing new child cohort for his choline clinical trial. So here we'll have children prenatally exposed to alcohol receiving choline or not. And at the CFAS face-to-face meeting, I presented the fact that we have some preliminary data with Jen from her animal model that shows a suggestion that choline has some anti-inflammatory effects in general. So I'm really optimistic about that. Jeff has told me he's already collected about 20 samples, so we're on our way toward that. Tina also mentioned that the Ukraine cohort is ongoing, and we should have at least some samples from that group by the end of the year. So that's great. So I think this will really increase our understanding of the role of maternal immune status on infant outcome and how immune variables might serve as a possible biomarker or a predictor of outcomes, and finally the possible role of choline in inflammation. These are our demographics. We have differing demographics by site, obviously, from Ukraine, all Caucasian, from the San Diego group, primarily non-Hispanic, mainly Caucasian, but some African American and Hispanic heritage, and then in Minnesota, Caucasian, some Native American and African American, and as Jeff has mentioned, has told us some of the children, most of the children are adopted. So that is our overview for AIM 1. AIM 2 is to extend our assessment of immune and neurobehavioral outcomes into adulthood, and Claire covered a lot of this adult study in her presentation at the last CFAS call. We are doing this part of our UO1 in collaboration with Claire and Therese Grant. Claire in Atlanta, Therese in Seattle. Their study, as Claire mentioned, is a two-tier assessment. Tier one is done kind of remotely. They're recruiting individuals from previous research databases. They will do demographic and health surveys remotely, and they are building a registry, hoping to collect 250 individuals in each of those sites. And then Tier 2 is the more in-depth investigation of a subset of individuals, adults, from that registry. In Vancouver, we're not building a registry per se, although our consent form asks individuals if they agree to be contacted for future studies. So in a sense, we will at least have a database if we want to build on the current study. We are just going to collect a full 120, 40 with full FAS, 40 exposed to alcohol, 40 controls. And all of our measures are being done on the study day. We'll do the demographic and health surveys, and with Claire and Therese, we developed an adult health survey, and I'll talk more about that in a second, and then do an in-depth assessment of physical characteristics, a dysmorphology exam, immune function, mental health, and so on. And we have some unique resources in British Columbia, in Canada in general, so let me talk a bit about that. I'll get to that in a second. I just wanted to mention one other thing about recruiting. Our recruiting is slightly different. As I mentioned, in Atlanta and Seattle, they'll be recruiting from existing longitudinal samples. In Seattle, it's Anne Price's original sample, and in Atlanta, it's Claire's sample that she has been seeing for many, many years. For Vancouver, our ethics would not allow us to reach out and recruit people whom we can identify through Chris Locke, through Tim Oberlander, through other connections we have. Rather, this needs to be a community study where we send out information into the community and individuals then can contact us, and that's their consent to contact, and then we can contact them and bring them into the study. So we will be recruiting from the community, controls to be drawn from the same communities, friends, siblings, anybody we can get our hands on. Everyone who comes in will ask, do they have friends who would be interested in participating?
Joanne, you have about 10 minutes tops.
Okay. I will I'll be done. We've met with elders and leaders in the community. We're advertising. We recruited at the UBC FASD meeting just recently. 30 individuals have filled out the consent to contact. And this was our banner at the meeting, and we had a tremendous response to it. So on the study day, we will do the demographic questionnaire. Physical and mental health will be assessed, a blood draw for hematology screen, A1C and cytokine analysis, a psychiatric screen. We will follow that up by extracting medical records. And one unique thing I wanted to mention is a data repository in BC called PopData BC. It's accessed through the individual's personal health number, and after that, everything will be anonymized. But there we have lifetime records of health service use, physician diagnoses, all prescription drugs dispensed in community pharmacies, and educational attainment. So these linked databases are really a unique resource here in BC that we are taking advantage of. Cognitive and executive function will be assessed, substance use, activities of daily living, and life stressors and social resources. So all of this is all of the instruments that we use on the test day will be totally consistent with Atlanta and Seattle. So in that sense, we will all be collecting the same information. A broad health screen of these domains will be assessed. And as I said, we built this with Claire and Therese, who carried a large part of this, building on the CDC Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, and then adding modules ourselves written in the same style where modules were missing where we wanted to assess certain areas. Individuals will have, at the end of all of the questionnaires, a dysmorphology exam. As Ken mentioned, he has trained, worked with Chris and Tim to assess them and actually together do a dysmorphology exam on 3 adults who volunteered. That was a fantastic session. The blood draw for analysis. Saliva collection has now been added. We're adding that to our ethics. That will be sent to Tatiana. 2D photographs will be taken in collaboration with Peter Hammond as a second way of assessing a diagnosis and specifically with facial features. Our demographics, again, are diverse among the 3 sites. We think that's an advantage in this case. It lets us look at factors that can influence outcome, given that all of the assessments are going to be similar among sites. So we think this will make a big contribution, one of the first really extensive studies on adults, and with the three sites, we'll have a total of 360 individuals. I think that's going to be an incredibly rich data set to see what does affect outcome, how can we best diagnose, assess adults with FASD, for FASD, extend our knowledge of the health problems in adults, hopefully convince physicians that this is really an issue. Many adult physicians seeing these individuals, GPs and other healthcare providers who see these individuals don't know that they have health problems and brush them off when they mention their health problems. So I think this will make a big contribution in that sense. Lots of progress. We hope to start actually scheduling visits in June. We're just finishing final revisions to some of the questionnaires and other forms that were sent into ethics. As we've actually started to implement things, we realized we need some revisions. That should be done in the next couple of weeks. We've hired people. We have the instruments. We're training. We know what cytokines. We will assess. We've given talks. I gave a talk at Douglas College, and Claire and I talked at the UBC meeting. We also have a few informal consultants, Jan Lutke, most people know her from the UBC meetings, Brenda Knight, who's a psychologist, Julie Conry, who's a psychologist, are working with us to help us review materials, support and debrief participants, and talk us through the questionnaires. So we have lots of support in implementing the study, and Ken, as I mentioned, was a tremendous help to us in getting us going. So that's it. We hope we can change what's known about adults with FASD, and we hope healthcare providers, once we can get the information out, will be aware that these people do have health issues at a much younger age than their unexposed peers. And that's it.
All right. Thank you. Any questions?
Sorry, I have one. It's Mike. Is there any space for imaging in there? I mean, the adult would be really, really interesting. The mother-infant would be really interesting.
No, we couldn't build that in. We don't, I mean, there is imaging in Vancouver, but to be able to bring these people into the study would have added a huge monetary cost to the study. So we didn't do that, but this is a possible phase two for this, because we will have connections with all of these individuals.
We just got funded to rescan. I think we're going to get funded anyway to rescan the original individuals in the Streisgood-Buchstein studies. I mean, in terms of brain imaging, is what you're talking?
Face imaging.
Oh.
Oh, face imaging. Yes, we're doing the 2D photos, and we'll send those to Peter.
Oh, cool. Sorry, I didn't hear it in the as you were listing it. I thought.
Yes, Peter. We're doing the 2D photos. You sent us the template for the Avery labels, and we will do some sample photos, practice photos on us, and send them to you to be sure we're taking them the correct way. We have the tripod, we have the iPads. Yes, we will do 2D facial photos and send them to you. And that's already been approved by ethics.
Any other questions?
This is Rajesh. Quick question, both for Joanne and maybe Claire as well, and Jeff. In these studies on the adults, is there a feasibility to have some additional blood? I would be very interested in knowing if there was an imprint, like a whole body imprint that could be seen in the microRNA profiles that resulted that you know were maintained in adulthood, if it's a true DOAHAD, and if you know, as we're finding these microRNAs are biologically active, that could be a really interesting thing to look at as well. Any feasibility with in terms of sample availability there?
Yeah, we let's talk offline because we will have enough. Can you use plasma?
Plasma would be actually the best.
Yeah, so we will be collecting plasma, and we'll collect a big enough sample. We could certainly send you an aliquot. We just have to talk offline and figure out to add that to the ethics.
Right, right, and how to just go about it. But in terms of the amount I would need, it's, you know, not much, maybe 300 microliters or so.
Okay, let's talk further.
Let's talk, okay.
This is Claire. We could definitely do that, but it comes into, we might have to have a supplement or something.
Oh, yes, yes, and the money, that is a whole other issue, but in theory, at least.
Because the blood is no problem, I don't think, if we have the people here.
Okay.
Any other questions, concerns? Okay, all right. Any comments from the advisory committee, NIAAA?
I have none.
None at the moment, Ed.
James, I think it's your first call.
Great progress, and I don't have any specific questions at the moment.
Okay, thank you. NIAAA, Dale, Bill?
Sounds good to me so far.
Okay.
Dale,
Bill, and Mike Suddy, can you all stay on the line after everyone hangs
up?
Yeah,
no problem.
Sure.
Yep, here.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you, everyone, and we'll talk again later in the month.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.